sobering, stimulating, and hot. It's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program.
Now, wait now, Nimble. Hold on, brother. Easy now. Wait, what's this pageant that you were trying to get me in, this African pageant?
African what?
There was a pageant that you wanted me in. It's like a male pageant?
Yeah, the male pageant. Yeah, certainly. I mean, you are good-looking, you know, brother.
Hold on. Thank you. Now, I looked at those pictures, man. That pageant looked outstanding.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Now, you know I'm a so-called American Negro. I'm just, you know, I'm getting my Pan-Africanist weight up, okay? So you got to take it easy with me. Brother,
okay.
I saw a brother in an outfit. It looked like he had a Speedo on. I was getting nervous.
No, okay, that was, okay. This is, it was during a pageant called, how we call it? I mean, in Côte d'Ivoire, we have the male pageant. It's called Boucan or Bagnon pageant. That's where, you know, Bagnon pageant is for male. So it was during the pageant that, you know, that I went there, you know, to take some pictures. But, I mean, it had the same, you know, idea of express the beauty of black people, you know, the blackness, you know, the Africanity, you know, the Nubian blackness. So Nemba is not, you know, so it was not just, you know, from my clothing line, but it was just the pageant for black people.
Right. It's a beautiful pageant. It's called
Bagnon.
Bagnon. Bagnon. Bagnon.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And Bagnon is in a Bété language. Bété is one of the tribes in Côte d'Ivoire.
Now, there's talk, there's discussions behind the scenes that I might be a model for Nimba Clothing in the next pageant. we're talking about the outfits now. Just please promise me I won't have to rock that one with the Speedo, please, the biker shirt.
Nimba, you know, we are building like more new, like shirts, T-shirts, you know, I mean, women collection, dress, all kind of stuff. I mean, the Speedo was not the Nimba, it was not in Nimba collection. It was just, you know, somebody wearing those things. So it was not in Nimba collection.
Okay, good. Okay. All right, for the record, y'all, that was not in Nimba's clothing line. All right, that picture. We've linked to that picture in post show notes. If people want to see it.
No, please. It was somebody was trying to, you know, to look good. That's all.
Okay, great, man. So listen, yeah. You've been listening to the show. I'm very honored to have you as a listener. I always enjoy your input, man. What do you think? Where do we need to go right now with the relationship between Africa and the diaspora? Do you think it's an economic and cultural level that we need to move to?
I think we can move to both ways, economically, I mean, socially, everything, you know. I mean, for me, I think that, you know, from, the Caribbean to the black, the black community here in our state, it's just the continuity of Africa, you know. Right now, I really don't like the term African-American, or I really don't like the term...
Wait, hold on. I'm giving you a standing ovation, brother. I don't like it either. Yes. Why don't you like it?
You know, because that's not your identity. It's just your nationality, given by not you, but by another people. You see, so that's not you. So how you can call yourself African-American? Before, they were calling you N-word, but the N-word. Later, they changed to Negro, and now people of color. You see, so that's not you. We are African, or we are Kemet, the Nubian. So I think the term African-American, I mean, for me, is just a bogus term. You know, our people, black people, you know, from St. Lucia, you know, call themselves, you know, Jamaica, you know, but that's not exactly who you are. We are all African people. So now, by coming back to your question, you know, I think African people born here in the United States, has to increase more the relationship towards Africa. The same thing that Jew people here doing in Israel, the same thing the Arab people doing, you know, the Middle East, or the Chinese, you know, doing, you know, in China or Vietnam. That's the same thing the black people have to do, you know, towards Africa. Because nobody will do in our place except us. Contrary, they want us to be divided.
So Nimba, what do you think the, you know, obviously, you know, I'm involved with the effort for the United States of Africa, and
yes.
Very important effort. You're involved in business.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the keys, you think, for Africa to improve its view of the diaspora? Because I had to tell you, Nimba, when I was in Africa, I got so much love, man. coming back home. I was in the room with people from over 40 nations in Africa all at one time. Now, this was my first time, so it was very touching for me.
Oh, yeah.
But I have to tell you, the view that many Africans on the continent that have never been here have of blacks in America, you know, it's negative because of the media imagery and the hip-hop music and all of that. So there's a lot of work that we have to do on both sides to improve our view of one another. You know, what are some of the things that we can do to improve our view of one another?
Exactly. I mean, good question. Exactly. That's what right now I'm doing. I think, okay, yeah, you're absolutely right. When I was in Africa before I'm coming here to the United States, I have a view about black people, you know, I mean, about my brother and sister, you know, in the United States. You know, that was, I mean, I cannot say 100%, you know, like, negative. But it was, you know, I mean, it was the image of like a violence, you know, of music, something. So I think you gotta be in the ground to say exactly, you know, what is about. So I think to improve, you know, I think we have to work hard by first, you know, trying to set it up, you know, a open mind, you know, try to educate ourselves each other. That's the same thing I'm doing. I mean, when I'm here in the United States, I love to talk about Africa in general, but in particular about my country, Cote d'Ivoire, to my brother and sister here, because they don't know. And nobody will talk, to them, you know, what it is. You know, of course, the mainstream media want to brainwash the African people here. I mean, that's obvious, because your enemy will never teach you, I mean, the truth. You see, as we say in Africa, there's a proverb in Africa say, the fox will never teach the chicken how to hide.
Hold on. African proverb, is this from Cote d'Ivoire?
Yeah, from Cote d'Ivoire.
Okay,
yeah.
Hold on, let me drop it. The fox will never teach the chicken.
The chicken how to hide.
How to hide. Man,
yes.
Standing ovation for Nimba. Okay, go ahead.
Yes. So, like, I mean, because me, personally, I'm doing, you know, my work, trying to educate, you know, my brother and sister, you know, about Africa and Cote d'Ivoire, because they have the overall idea about Africa is all negative. Sometimes, you know, when I say I'm from Cote d'Ivoire and I show people, you know, where I'm from, Abidjan, the city, they say, what, this is Africa? Because, they will never see a big city past Abidjan, a city of 4 million people with the skyscraper everywhere, I mean, the highway,
wow,
people everywhere, I mean, they're going to believe it. And also, when I talk about, you know, about the music, that's why every day, you know, I like to share the music, of Cote d'Ivoire, you know, to people, or like business opportunities, in Cote d'Ivoire, because there are too many opportunities black people here can really, you know, take advantage.
That's right.
Know,
that's right.
Business in Cote d'Ivoire.
That's right. Well, everybody, you've been listening to the voice of Nimba. You all know him from the show Nimba from Cote d'Ivoire. We will limit our Ivory Coast mentions to maybe two a show.
Okay.
Nimba, I want to thank you, brother. I've got the clothing line. Nimba has sent me pictures, everyone.
My pleasure.
He looks very handsome, brother. We put the photos up soon. And let's talk business, Nimba. I want to see if we can work together and get behind your clothing line, all right?
For sure. And I'm on one thing, you know.
Yes.
That's one thing. I'm here to really create, you know, to create a business, black, you know, group, you know, business-wise, you know,
mm-hmm,
together. So I'm willing to work with anybody who want to have business contact in Cote d'Ivoire.
So you'll be our point man for anything that goes on in Cote d'Ivoire, is that correct?
Our point.
Beautiful.
You want to invest in the clothing line or
Nimba, give out the email. Let them know how they can get at you, brother.
Okay, to get at me, my email is Nimba Mahat, Nimba NIMBAMAAT at gmail.com. Again, Nimba Mahat. Mahat, like a NAAT. So Nimba Mahat.
Spell it one more time. One more time. Spell it.
Nimba Mahat at gmail.com.
Okay, beautiful. Nimba, we're going to continue to build with you. some people may not understand what we're doing here, but this is very important work to link those of us in the diaspora who are back home, often involved on both sides of the Atlantic like you. It's a pleasure to talk to you, brother. All right, go back, kick back and listen and enjoy the rest of the show. I'm going to pump. Tell me what I'm playing again, brother. Coupe de Cali?
Coupe de Cali, yes. Coupe de Cali music. Right. And that is the most popular music in Africa right now.
Okay, I got a question for me. Eddie E. Props, Eddie Pettit from Brooklyn, he says, does Nimba know about Coupe Cloué from Haiti?
Coupe Cloué?
Coupe Cloué from Haiti. Don't have me cursing out here. I don't know what I'm saying.
No. Okay. Coupe Cloué, yeah, because I have some Asian brother and sister here, you know, in Jacksonville and Miami. But yeah, I mean, I hear, you know, some song about it, but I'm not really, you know, down in there.
Okay, so let's start the Ivory Coast Haitian Trade Association. E Props from Brooklyn, Nimba, Ivory Coast, based in Florida, if I'm correct. Where in Florida, bro?
Yeah, I'm living in Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, Brooklyn connection, Haitian Ivory Coast connection on the Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee program. Take care, Nimba.
Okay, take care, my brother.
Okay, love you, man. Peace.
Take care too. Peace.
That's Nimba, y'all. One of the best ever did it on the commenting for our show. Has a clothing line. See if we can get together and link up. Coupe de Cali is the music. He sent me, I mean, I must have about 2 hours worth of this music. July 30th, 2009. I'm going to let you kick back and enjoy this. E Props, another great brother of mine, been riding with BlackElectric.com forever. He wanted to know about Coupe Cloué. E Props, send me some music, some Haitian music. Coupe Cloué, if I'm saying it right, saidboogie@gmail.com. Yeah, it's the Ivory Coast. No more. Cote d'Ivoire on the Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. DJ Eric Ending whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com. You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Now, let me give you some more. You know my French is whack, so I can't even pronounce these groups. I'm going to pump some more. Batou Boucher. They're cursing. Somebody tell me. I have French speakers in Canada that listen to my show. I don't know what's being said here. It's actually a former Creole, he told me. I love to see Haitian, Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire, unity.
You are listening to the hottest show in the diaspora, the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program. The godfather of cyberspace in the garden of black universalism, Mr. Cedric Muhammad.
Coupe de Cali. feeling this. If you have any comments on our discussion with Nimba, he gave us a little bit of geopolitical background on Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, and particularly their relationship with the former colonial master, France, who Nimba openly called racist on this program. I wanted to get to from the Griot, Roland Laird, a good friend of mine, penned a piece, another RU representative, by the way. Black alums must organize and activate for the community. Says just as alumni encourage their universities to pump dollars into various programs and university departments, black alumni need to encourage them to funnel resources into the community. The support of black alumni of university cuts to the core of what black power and personal responsibility can mean in the 21st century, with black people collectively using their resources at their disposal to help other black people succeed. When Brown University appointed Ruth Simmons as the first African-American Ivy League university president in 2000, the university galvanized its alumni with the formation of the Inman Page Black Alumni Council, IPC. 4 years later, Simmons spoke at the Schomburg Research Library of Black Culture in Harlem, and from that gathering of 300 black alumni, a New York metro area chapter of IPC was formed, holding its first meeting at the offices of Black Enterprise Magazine. During that meeting, potential objectives like student mentoring, student summer internships, and alumni networking were discussed. While each one of those objectives were well responded to, the item most alumni agreed on was that black alumni needed to support Simmons. Feeling the camaraderie in the room, I added, I think we also have a chance to be SNCC 2.0. SNCC 2.0. To my surprise, some of the younger alumni asked, what the heck is SNCC? And some of the older alums said, what do Stokely Carmichael and H-Rat Brown have to do with us? Not wanting to disrupt the meeting by starting a debate, I let it go. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, came into being on February 1st, 1960 in Greensboro, North Carolina, when four college students from North Carolina A&T purchased items at Greensboro's downtown F.W. Woolworth's and then sat down at the whites-only lunch counter and waited to be served. When a white waitress immediately told them that they had to leave, they politely explained that since they bought items at the store, they should be allowed to sit at the counter. While a black woman who was working behind the counter called them stupid and ignorant and told them, that's why we can't get anywhere today, there was a lack of forceful opposition from the white store employees. Ultimately, though, the four young men weren't served, but they weren't removed from the store either. Emboldened by their small victory, they returned to the same store and the same whites-only lunch counter the next day, only this time they were accompanied by 30 more students. Soon, these sit-ins spread to other black college campuses and caught the attention of Ella Baker, executive director of the Southern Christian Leadership Council, or conference, pardon me, SCLC. Baker saw the significance of the sit-ins and hoping to harness their energy, she organized SNCC's founding conference at Shaw University in Raleigh, North Carolina in April 1960. Her guiding principle for the fledgling organization was a group-centered leadership upon which SNCC would unleash the power of communities to pool the collective ability of their residents to overcome oppression. I'm reading an article, Black Alums Must Organize, Activate for Community, Roland Laird. I wonder if he attended the Rutgers University Facebook get-together that I heard about. I missed it. Anybody go to that? Anybody went to the Rutgers University Facebook reunion, I call it? I heard it was hot. I've seen the pictures on Facebook. A couple people that I haven't seen in a long time. Are you? Anyway. As SNCC continued to evolve, it formed the concept of black power. Unfortunately, black power meant different things to different people, and because of this, SNCC was stymied in trying to build an operational framework around the concept. The organization ultimately fell apart. Yet, from SNCC's ashes, the black power concept serves as a much-needed bridge between the activities of the black college students that formed SNCC in the 1960s and the black college alumni associations of the 21st century. Clearly, the history of any black alumni group at any university is not as dramatic as the history of SNCC. Yet, I believe that it is a sign of the times. When SNCC was created, there was an organized struggle that tackled the issues confronting black people. When a group of people decided to take a stand, there was a framework to incorporate them into that organized struggle. Without the skills and stewardship of Ella Baker and SELC, SNCC would have been nothing more than some sit-ins in the winter of 1960. Currently, no such framework exists for the activities of black alumni groups throughout the country. Is this true? Those of you all that have graduated from HBCUs or historically black colleges and universities, that's what it stands for, or state universities with large black populations, are these alumni associations another untapped vehicle for group economics and the things that Roland Laird is laying out in what he wrote? You tell me. He says currently no such framework exists for the activities of black alumni groups throughout the country. This is due in part to the times, but more so to the way that black alumni view the role of the university in society. Case in point, Brown University is a wealthy school. Its endowment is over $1 billion. Even with a black president, there is often the response from black alumni that Brown is rich. They don't need my money. Meanwhile, the response to that is typically, you have to be in it to win it. If you want more black students admitted to the university, you have to bring something to the table. While both perspectives are valid, there is also a bigger picture that both miss. What do you all think? Are black alumni associations an opportunity waiting to happen? In the same way that Ella Baker's vision formed SNCC, by bringing together the students who participated in the sit-ins, black alumni associations need a similar catalyzing agent to bring them together and form a larger organization. For this reason, I propose the formation of a Congress of Black Alumni Associations, COBA, C-O-B-A-A. The formation of a Congress of Black Alumni Associations. This is an interesting idea. Roland Laird, a friend of mine, maybe we'll have him on to talk about this. What do you think it would be? Would it end up being just an organization that would party and, you know what, bullish? Or would it be an organization that could be a catalyst for something very powerful? Roland proposes a Congress of Black Alumni Associations, COBAA. The founders of COBAA can decide what structures and mechanisms can be put in place to deliver those university resources to the communities. They should mirror the three major needs of our community: health, education, and economic development. Each of these areas can be mapped to the core competencies of many colleges and universities throughout America. Developing the delivery structures and the mechanisms will only take creativity and a serious work ethic, something black college graduates have in abundance. In areas of health, COBAA can play a key role in addressing some of the issues afflicting our communities. COBAA members can identify which of its alma maters are doing the best research around diseases like AIDS, heart disease, breast cancer, and prostate cancer. Once the top two or three research universities are identified, black alumni can direct dollars to those institutions. Additionally, black physicians in COBAA can be encouraged to share ideas around health and perhaps even create COBAA health fairs in our communities. In the realm of education, there's the obvious desire to get more black students to attend and graduate from whichever university an alumni has graduated. An easy rallying point, it requires a donation strategy to the university and an outreach strategy to the high school students in the community. I'm intrigued, Roland. I'm intrigued by this idea of a Congress of Black Alumni Associations. Many times the deciding factor in whether a scientist, for example, receives a grant or is not is based on the quality of the student outreach strategy proposed, which is one reason why so much grant money reserved for the African American students is left on the table each year. Imagine if there was a concerted effort by a Congress of Black Alumni Associations to locate professors who are applying for grants with outreach components. COBAA, the Congress of Black Alumni Associations, could be the facilitators of the outreach, building relationships between universities and school districts throughout the country. Not only would this impact the educational opportunities of thousands of Black students nationwide, but over time it would create many more Black scientists while also bringing more research dollars to our alma maters. This is a serious win-win and is really scratching the surface in terms of potential benefits. What do you think, Roland Laird? Proposing a Congress of Black Alumni Associations. Yes, it's still Cote d'Ivoire, formerly known as the Ivory Coast Hour on my show. I want to, that was Ronaldo. Let me play that back. You all heard me talking. All right, we're good now. Ronaldo featuring Camnuse. I hope he's not cursing in French or Creole. I don't know, that doesn't sound too good.
Like me, they need you right now. When they don't, they'll cast you out. Like a leper. You see, their morals, their code. It's a bad joke. It's dropped at the first sign of trouble. They're only as good as the world allows them to be. I'll show you. When the chips are down, these civilized people, they'll eat each other.
Y'all would think I was jinxed with a month of bad luck. I'm now hunting and catch through the duck. I'm out here, you can't be like the loony cartoon. But this ain't no cartoon. Clear out the room. I said, boy, try and learn the fundamentals here, son. Like a rooster and a chicken hawk, I teach us about it. I place my money on one, I pull it out to run. In front of your son and both y'all is done.
You are tuned in to the Watchman.
Gotta do to make a half a million.
Black Coffee Channel.
Run up in your building and go straight for the bank. Got the Saran wrap at the bottom of the tank. I know those tricks. Your supply is popping up. I know those. Give me those bricks. Now while I'm out.
Cedric Muhammad.
You're bouncing at the club acting like you can't get it.
Cedric Muhammad. You are tuned in to the Watchman. Cedric Muhammad.
Just a new burner in the closet and a big one. You, your brother, and your pops quick. Might take one to get y'all both. I'ma make sure I hit y'all close. And whoever's left guaranteed he getting it all. Cause this could've ran when I was licking at y'all. I give back money plus I'm in the hood. And I ain't got no felonies. I'm good with crimes. Not all that with me, but I'm good with
great way. I eat your face, and I got a hungry lawyer that'll eat the case. I used to cop so heavy that the block got mad, then start calling up the cops like calves. My 16s make go to the dorm, lock in and work out, then come out.
Looking back at the historical record, we really haven't seen a drought like this, this severe, since probably the drought years of the 50s.
77 Texas counties are in extreme or exceptional drought. No other state in the nation has a region in either of those categories. And experts say there's no relief in sight.
We still have many, many weeks to go through, and we think the drought is only going to be getting worse before it gets better.
It all comes amid a scorching summer.
I had a day around 104.
As drought reigns in a state thirsty for relief. Janet Shamley in NBC News, Houston.
Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program, July 30th, 2009, a Thursday, a makeup date, rain delay, we'll call it, drought. Any of you all living in the drought zone, Shane from Houston, is Houston getting hit by this? Really sounds bad. Is the recession over? Is it coming to an end? A program that we like to watch, GPS with Fareed Zakaria, caught Noriel Rabini in a few of his building.
Are we done with this recession? Here to tell us, we have an economist, a historian, and a businessman, each at the top of his field. The economist, Noriel Rubini, is known on Wall Street as Dr. Doom. So when he said in a speech last week that the economy is likely to recover by the end of the year, stocks actually rose 1% in 1 hour. The billionaire real estate and publishing mogul Mortimer Zuckerman is usually an optimist, but last week he wrote in the Wall Street Journal that unemployment and the economy is much worse than you might think. Yikes. And as for Harvard historian Neil Ferguson, he has been, in his words, a moderate doomster, warning on this program just a few weeks ago that the gigantic budget deficits of the United States could eventually have dire consequences. Neil, what should we make of the fact that with all this bad news, Goldman Sachs had record profits, JP Morgan did pretty well?
Well, this goes to show that in the Darwinian world of finance, there are winners as well as losers, and the best-run banks are now in a position to make some serious money, particularly on proprietary trading, which has always been one of Goldman Sachs's strong suits.
Which, just to explain to people,
which is,
what that
in means. A sense, making trades, making transactions with the firm's own capital. But they're still playing this relatively cautiously. It was interesting to see the number of other banks, Morgan Stanley, for example, had to report much more disappointing losses. And this reminds us that the banking crisis isn't over. It may be over for Goldman and it may be over for JP Morgan, but there's a whole tier of other banks, particularly regional banks, that are still in real difficulty. And the losses on real estate, particularly on commercial real estate, in fact, lie ahead of us. If you try to map out when those losses are going to peak, it will probably be in early next year. One can't say that this is over. Yes, there are some green shoots in the stock market. Yes, you'll get good results from some well-run financial institutions, but the systemic problems in the banking system are not over.
Now, you own one of the largest commercial real estate portfolios in the world. What is going to happen?
Well, I do think that that is an area of the economy that is going to be very weak for certain kinds of commercial real estate. The particular companies that are going to be in trouble are those that have, and buildings, that are those that have financing coming due and can get refinancing. That's what's going to cause the crunch. It's not necessarily just in terms of the occupancy. It's in terms of the financial structure.
But is it a large problem?
It's in literally the hundreds of billions of dollars. But the one that I think is even worse than commercial real estate, and not just because I'm in commercial real estate, is credit cards. There are gigantic numbers of credit cards that are going to go into default. And that is both a business and a consumer thing. The number of credit cards for business went from 5 million in the year 2000 to 29 million. That's $300 billion in exposure on that. And they're defaulting at a rate even faster than individuals. But it's in the hundreds of billions, even trillions of dollars. And if you read the financial reports from the banks, the biggest losses that they were suffering was in their credit card obligations. And that, I think, is going to really peak. And that's what's going to put great pressure on the banks. They know that the trouble they have in that category, and that's why they're hoarding their cash and not lending very much, because they have huge losses in commercial real estate and in credit cards that they are looking to, and they know they have to cover that. So I don't think we're out of the credit crunch either.
Noriel, let me ask you to clarify. I gather you felt that that the reports of the end of the recession from you were kind of exaggerated. That was that you didn't quite mean to suggest that you were calling the end of the recession.
Well, the recession technically might be over by the end of the year, and it will last 24 months, three times as long and more than six times as deep as the previous two. But I think that the question that is the most relevant is not whether the recession will be over today or in 6 months, but rather whether the recovery is going to be strong or shallow. And in my view, the problems of the economy are such that there'll be a very weak recovery. So it's going to feel like a recession, even if we're technically a recession. For example, the unemployment rate is right now 9.5. By year end, it's going to be well above 10%. It's going to peak at 11% sometime next year. So even if output were to recover, the job market conditions are going to be awful. The U.S. consumer is shopped out, is saving less, is debt burden. So I see a very weak, anemic recovery with even the risk of a double dip.
Now, you say, I mean, at the end of the day, the jobs numbers are the most important numbers because it will determine spending patterns. You say that the unemployment picture looks a lot bleaker than people realize.
Yes, I think it is not just the absolute unemployment, but you have underemployment. And if you add that to unemployment, the total people who are, in a sense, working less or not working at all is 25 million, 16.8%. And I agree with Nouriel completely. This number is going to go up and is going to be in the range of 11% next year. And we've had not just temporary unemployment. You've had companies like General Motors and Chrysler wiping out entire divisions and brands. You've had banks and financial institutions eliminating whole areas of business. These are jobs that are not coming back. So we're going to have a much slower recovery in terms of the employment going forward. And that's what makes me be worried. And I think the risk that Nouriel refers to basically is there going to be a second dip? And will the political system allow for another stimulus program after having, frankly, such a limited effect on the existing stimulus program, which in my judgment was terribly badly structured, to do what it should do, which was to get the money into the economy quickly, because otherwise the economy feeds on itself on the downside?
Well, we've added a $787 billion stimulus on top of a fiscal crisis that is structural in nature and has very little to do, in fact, with this great recession. The fundamental problem is that nobody in Congress wants to agree on any measure that is likely to bring the budget into long-term balance. Republicans are addicted to the idea of tax cuts. Democrats can't wait to spend more public money on new reforms that have nothing to do with combating the crisis, whether it's on healthcare or climate change or you name it. So there's a major fiscal crisis building in the United States. It's been building for some time. And that is the biggest threat to any long-term recovery. At some point, Americans and foreigners are going to wake up to the fact the U.S. is on an unsustainable path. It's clear in the budget that was produced at the beginning of this year that there's no plan to bring the United States finances under control. And we're going to see a crisis at the level of the states next. So this is a real train wreck, and I think it's a cause for grave concern for everybody right now.
GPS, they were dropping it. Nouriel Roubini and others, Fareed Zakaria. You put the camera on me. I have deprived you of my physical form today. Okay, let's get down to business. Let me talk about Jay-Z for a minute. One of the things I like about Jay-Z, in some ways he's a lot like Rakim. He's created a mystique about him by limiting his media availability. I don't know how many people have noticed this. You've noticed Jay-Z never done a movie that we know about or care about. Selective with his interviews. When you see Jay-Z, it's because somebody paid for you to see his image. Commercials, performances, high profile interviews, magazine covers. Very selective. I think that's one of the most underrated things about Jay-Z, is the careful way that he's controlled his image. He's created a mystique about him. He's seen when he lets himself be seen only when he wants to be seen. Okay? So Jigga gave me comfort. Some of you all know that I'm on Twitter. I have followers on Twitter, but I have not sent one tweet yet. Should I get on Twitter? I'm going to let you all answer that over the weekend. Should I send my first tweet next week? Article. I think this is in the BBC, or pardon me, BET. Jay-Z explains his Twitter absence. He enjoys watching from the sideline. Article says, just because Jay-Z isn't on Twitter doesn't mean he isn't reading your tweets. During an exclusive interview on BBC Radio with the UK's Tim Westwood last weekend, Mr. Carter finally explained his lack of involvement on the popular social networking conglomerate Twitter. After Westwood asked several user-submitted Twitter questions, the inquiry of Hove's Twitter whereabouts became the focal point of the 35-minute interview. I've always been a private person, Jay nonchalantly responded. Hold on, let me see. I've always been a private person. But without Jay activating his own account, the self-proclaimed hip-hop titan is still involved in the Twitter craze. He explained, I watch it though, everyone that's around me, so I'm like a Twitter voyeur or something. The Brooklyn MC even broke down a brief list of pros and cons about the 140 character chat room. I really like it when people are witty. I don't like it when they're just saying, see, I just went to the bathroom, especially for a promo. But I guess however people have to get out there, that's cool. How's my Jigga impression, y'all? I'm killing it right now, right? And if by chance Sean Carter does in fact sign up for Twitter, make sure to put some thought and humor into your commentary in order to grab his attention. When people are witty and use it to say funny things, that's when it's used at its most effectiveness. That's intricate. That's an inside thing. That's intricate. Jigga, I'm with you, brother. Again, you're showing great leadership. Those that don't know, Jigga is one half of the executive office of the Death to Skinny Jeans movement. Him and President Obama share executive powers in our movement. But for Jay-Z to be on Twitter a lot, it goes against the image and the brand and the reputation that he's created. Again, I write about etiquette and networking in my book. Etiquette and networking in my book. I have a chapter on it. I would recommend that Jay-Z not tweet. I think it hurts his image.
Elf, could you close?
I would say, Jigga, don't tweet. Now, as for me, what should I do, y'all? Should I tweet? Right now, I'm undecided. I'm thinking about sending out my first tweet next week. But me and Jigga now has made me think twice about this. I have a little bit of a mystique myself. It's real intricate. Should I tweet? Let me know. Jay-Z explaining his Twitter absence. I am a Facebook dude, though. As you know. Bloodshot eyes today. I was thinking about taking off the sunglasses. Bloodshot eyes. You don't want to see it. I got it 1 a.m. from the West Coast. Let's talk about my favorite program, the Tiny and Toya Show. I love this show. I missed it last week, so we're catching up now. Two episodes. But I think my comment is only on the more recent show. We spent some time with Tiny. Let's spend some time with Toya. Toya is Lil Wayne's ex-wife, if I'm correct. Tighten me up, y'all. Tighten me up if I'm a little off on that. She's the one on the right in that picture, Toya. The BET cameras love to have them in tight clothes, by the way, if you notice. This is all part of the script. Toya is trying to build a relationship with her mother, who has a substance abuse problem. I have some comments on this. I think Toya, I like her approach to it, but I think she may be mixing apples and oranges. Toya and her mom went and got their nails done. This is from Tiny and Toya.
I decided to take my mother to get her nails done because I be wanting to just pamper her a little bit, make her feel good about herself.
I feel so happy when you treat me for my nails done and all. I feel great, Toya.
Thank you, Mom. You be feeling like a new woman.
Mm-hmm. Let me call you up. I'm getting my nails done. Call back, Mom.
When you leave us, we go get our nails done together when you're
call
here.
Call back, Mom. Get my nails done. Call
when
back.
You leave.
I said, I can't get all the affordable now.
Nope, when you leave us, our feelings be hurt. I mean, I know she can be a mother. I know it's in her. But she probably feel like she can't because it's too late for whatever reason. But I don't feel like it's too late. I feel like she still have the chance to clean it, you know, to clean everything up.
You know what I wanted to ask you? Mm-hmm. I was planning something to do for my brother Rudy.
Did you call him for his birthday?
No, I ain't see him for his birthday.
Well, I talked to him on his birthday. You know, he just seemed sad, I guess, because nobody ain't really call him. You ain't call him, my daddy ain't call him. Right, so.
I see you for his birthday. I think I seen him. Let me see.
It just bothers me that I be trying to help you when you here and you just want to leave and go back home and hang with the wrong people and go back to drugs. Like, why?
Well, I go back home to be with my other children. I don't go back
Mama
home.
Mama and you, see you in
denial. I be trying to go back home and be with them to get things right with them.
Okay.
I love what Toya's doing, trying to give her mother a reason, I guess, to clean up, get off the drugs. But I think Toya also is longing for a mother-child relationship that she lacked, which she can never get back in the sense of a child and a mother. It's gone. So I think Toya is trying to do two things at once. She's trying to clean her mother up, and then she's trying to have a mother-daughter relationship. I don't think they both can happen at the same time. Now, she's showing her mother love and support, but I think her constant references to their past, the mother not being clean, the mother going back to New Orleans to use the drugs. If you notice, Toya's mom says she goes back to New Orleans to try to get right with her other children. I think that Toya's mother is not motivated by the constant references to the family members. I think she has tremendous guilt. Let me know if I'm wrong. If you saw the program, I don't think guilt is a strong form of motivation when it comes to a subject like that. I think you had to create a great desire. And it's hard to do that when you're expressing pain. To create a desire or an incentive in another person to do something that you want, it's difficult when you're giving them a sense of pain or a sense of guilt at the same time. I think Toya is doing that unintentionally. If you've ever been involved with someone with drugs, you know that it's tricky. You don't know what will be the straw that will break the camel's back, so to speak. And you also have to know whether the person is motivated internally or externally. Sometimes the references to family can make a person feel worse and drive them away. Other times it can give them a reason for being and motivation to clean themselves up. So I think if Toya would lay a little bit off of the, I want my mom back, I think she can pump the brakes a little bit with that and accelerate on the mom, I want you cleaned up. We want you cleaned up so that you can be the great woman that you are. If you noticed, she loved the fact that she was getting her nails done with Toya. I think they just need to keep doing things like that without the pressure of resuming or reliving or trying to capture something that is gone and will not be back, which is the youth mother-child relationship when you're an adolescent. That's gone. I think Toya wants that. Her mother can't handle that. Take her. The bowling was a great idea. The nails, Toya, I'm loving that. Great approach. Fall back with some of the references to the duties that your mother's not fulfilling. Any comments, let me know. Let's move to my other program. Second favorite show these days. T.O. The T.O. Show. I used to do work in Buffalo, so I think this is going to be a good situation for T.O. That's a football crazy town, and I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan, but I have to say the Buffalo Bills fans are the most intimately attached to their team. They live, eat, and breathe Buffalo Bills football in Buffalo, if you've ever been up there. And it's really all they have. As opposed in Philadelphia, you have the Sixers, you have the Phillies, and you have the Flyers. In Buffalo, really, you got the Sabres, I think. The hockey is strong, but other than that, it's a football town all the way. And they have a complex because of all the Super Bowls that they lost. T.O. is going to get the attention that he's been craving. This is a good move for him. That's a nice suit Terrell has on. Let me show you. It's Terrell, by the way, not Terrell. Terrell Owens. But I'm picking up on something. As you know, in my post-show notes, I suggested, in last week, maybe T.O. may he's living the party life right now. A little bit too strong. But there's some immaturity there that he's got to grow out of. I think that there's some tension there with him and Keita. I think Keita is good for T.O. I think Keita is good for T.O. She cares about him. She has insight into his professional career. Don't be surprised if we see this develop in years to come. Here's a snippet. The T.O. show. Keita and T.O. spending the day together in Niagara Falls. If you ever been to Niagara Falls at night, man, they didn't go at night. That would have been a rough situation there. Very beautiful. T.O. show last night, or Monday night.
And just when I thought my day was over, Keita had one more surprise.
All I know is I need to get out of these wet clothes. I did book a nice hotel for us to go back to, change.
You said we were going to Niagara, but you didn't say we were staying.
Carol, we're just staying for the night.
Where is Mo when I need her?
That is beautiful. Look at the rainbow.
What is this anyway?
This is a bed and breakfast. We only stay here for the night. It'll be cute. You gonna help me with my bag?
Nope.
You know what? You don't have to be so stanky. You got me totally wet on the boat. Hello.
Hi, how are you? I'm Carol.
How nice to meet you. Welcome to Park Place. This is my husband, Tom. Your room is number 3, and when you get settled into your room, you're welcome to come back down. I have some chocolate decadence brownies.
So we only have one room?
That's correct. All of our other rooms are sold out for this week. We do have a very comfortable room.
I hope that's not going to be a problem for you.
No, it won't be a problem. I thought we had 2 rooms, but we have 2 beds, right?
Oh, yeah.
We have
2
Fellas, please. I mean, please. Keita accidentally books one room, not 2. Please.
Sorry about the misunderstanding, but we're full otherwise.
Okay, I'm okay with that. We are okay with that.
The room is right up there. It's room number...
Number 3.
Room 3?
This is 3. This looks like my room when I was 9. We don't have to stay here, seriously.
You dragged me out for the last time, and we're going to stay.
I'm tired now.
This room is too small for the
room. I'm here. And I'm staying. So which side do you want?
You know what? Don't be funny. I'll just tell Louise that you...
Left or right? This is mine. You better get comfy.
They're in a room. 2 beds, though.
You know what? You need your head examined. What is wrong with you? You're like a big-ass kid. What is
that? What do you mean? Look what you got on.
This is Victoria's Secret, baby. I didn't tell you what you look. You like a big old red tampon.
T.O. had red pajamas on.
You and your lifesaver pants you got on.
You can talk about me all you want. It don't even matter. All I know is...
Like, and what is that?
You act like you ain't never seen a headscarf before.
The women that I've dated, they don't wear... scarves to bed.
And maybe you need to shake it up and quit dating all them white girls, exotic girls. If you get yourself a black chick, this is what you're gonna get.
Tell me you don't.
I'm not even looking at you. Forget you, Terrell.
I ain't studying you. Please tell me you don't.
I'm not studying you, Terrell. I'm not trying to impress you. I ain't trying to impress nobody. Whoever I'm with, they're gonna be proud to have a woman of quality. Do you understand?
Okay, let me comment on this now. This is Cedric Muhammad from West Coast, 114 degree heat, brain cells possibly fried, voice gone. Now, they're at a bed and breakfast. This is T.O. and Keita. Keita, in the picture that I have up, she's the one in the red, or women would know what color that is, somewhere in between red and pink. There may be a past there. There's something there with Keita and T.O., Keita the publicist. So they're in this room, 2 beds. Keita has on, and T.O. is right, the pants do look like a wrapper or a roller of lifesavers. Victoria's Secret notwithstanding, they look like multiple lifesavers. T.O. did have on some tight red pajamas, a little too tight. He probably had the underfooting that you have, like the footy, underfooting. You all know what I'm talking about if you have a young child with the tight pajamas with the footing on the bottom. The humor is there, a little tension, the jokes. Little nuance here and there. Don't be surprised if T.O. ends up with Keita. Listen up. Listen closely now. They're in the same room, different beds now. Keep your mind right. This is what we heard.
Quality.
You look like Angel Mama in a candy store.
Hey, you don't want to know what you look like.
With those jammer pants.
You look like an overgrown elf.
Lightsaber pants you got on.
You need to turn the light out because I'm tired. You don't need no covers.
Little ass bed.
Full of drama.
Look at this. I don't even fit in this bed. That's ridiculous.
You look ridiculous.
I'm going to sleep tonight.
As long as you don't bring them pajamas to Buffalo, we're leaving them right up in this bed and breakfast.
Now, they're both, their heads are on their respective pillows. They're talking. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of pillow talk, but they're not in the same bed. Let's keep it clean. A lot of rapport between these two.
Tia.
What?
Can you go to sleep?
So, T.
Did y'all catch that? So, T. Now, they're both facing opposite directions, or he's facing her back. So, T.
You think everything's going to be okay in Buffalo?
You know, God has brought me this far. He's going to see me through.
Good night.
Please, tell me you don't wear that scarf with Joe.
Now, I guess Joe is the nominal boyfriend. If you watch the show, I'd like to know your thoughts. The T.O. show, my second favorite show now. I like this. Professional relationship there, friends. But I don't know. I don't know who Joe is. I guess Joe is going to be introduced to us next week if I'm caught up. I think I'm caught up on all the episodes. I guess Joe will be Keita's nominal boyfriend. But deep down, I think we know what this is really all about. So there you have my brief assessment of Toya's relationship with her mom. I think Toya's doing a great job, but I think she's pushing a little bit, putting a little too much pressure on her mom to instantly revert back to the role that she was not able to fulfill. T.O. and Keita, a little tension there. I'm going to take a break, I think. Let you all let that marinate in your wig piece. I think I have a dedication for T.O. and Keita when I get back. If you have any comments on the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's speech on Michael Jackson, send it in. Nimba from the Ivory Coast, I want to thank him. There's another brother from the Ivory Coast that just sent us in an email. I appreciate that. Might be able to get to that. If you have any thoughts on this Congress of a Black Alumni Association, let me know. I think it's a great idea. My friend Roland Laird, maybe we'll have him on the show to elaborate more on that. And on the sports, if you think that the Philadelphia Phillies in their trade have enough now to win two World Series, which would have been the case if they had just gone out and gotten Roy Halladay, let me know. They've definitely improved themselves, and they did not have to give up the farm system. But I don't know if this is enough to guarantee that they're going to beat the Dodgers to win the pennant, or if they can beat a hot Boston or even a Yankee team with A-Rod swinging the bat the way he is. And I think A-Rod is for real this year, by the way. This will be the year he finally does not disappear in the postseason. July 30th, 2009, hottest show in the diaspora. Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. We'll be right back. I have a dedication for Keita and T.O.
Just
because
it's boring. Wow, wow.
Cedric Muhammad.
This album, I do life in jail. And if you under 21, you shouldn't listen to this. You hate it, going while he taking it. So when the cops come and get him, he'll be making them sick. So they can feel how I feel, I had a probable cause. You know,
that happens,
you don't follow the boss, follow the rules. Kids get followed to school. And the thug, ball your boo. Target practice was a horrible view. It's f***ed up what tomorrow could do. And these feel fall for who? Till we put you in the dirt, we ain't parting with you. Wild out.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
If a grilling your chick, is she with you?
Cedric Muhammad.
Come on, I can't tell you. If you find your cheating, let's go, girl, come on now. Millennium. Money making plenty of
you are tuned into the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.